The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The Healthy Baby Show is a production of iHeart Podcast Network and healthybaby.com.
Cord blood banking is a really interesting topic, I think, because it's one of those things that we're sort of discovering more and more along the way. Umbilical cord blood, it used to just be thought of as nothing special and would be discarded. And now we know the value that there are actually stem cells in the umbilical cord blood that could be used instead of a bone marrow transplant, which is pretty cool.
There's so much about having a baby that I wasn't prepared for, and I feel like I've learned a lot. I want to let you in on what I've discovered and save you the time and effort, give you a shortcut through the hours of research, correspondence with experts, the roller coaster of it all, so that you can walk away with new knowledge that you can act upon every episode. This is the Healthy Baby Show. I'm Shazi Visram. That voice you heard at the top is Dr. Catherine Kohari. She's an OBGYN specializing in maternal fetal medicine and high-risk pregnancies. We actually met back in 2016 when I was pregnant with my daughter Asha, and my pregnancy was deemed high-risk. It's a scary-sounding umbrella term that covers everything from an expectant mother with a pre-existing condition to a child with a genetic or anatomic abnormality to a complicated delivery like the C-section I ended up having at 38 weeks. Age can also be a factor. Pregnancies are treated as higher risk for women over the age of 35.
I love caring for pregnant women, and I really love the fact that there's so many unanswered questions from a scientific perspective about even the most basic questions related to pregnancy, related to labor. We're the logical go-to people to be advocates for our patients, for our patients' children. We're kind of on the front lines of a lot of the social issues that are going on in our country.
Dr. Kohari was a rock for me and my husband during our pregnancy. She was also supportive of our decision to bank our daughter Asha's cord blood, something we didn't do when our son Zane was born.
There's a concept of banking or storing your umbilical cord blood or parts of the placenta or umbilical cord with the idea that at some point in the future, you could access that blood and maybe use those stem cells for other members of the family who may be facing a medical condition where it would be useful to have. And the way we actually collect that is we do delayed cord clamping. So that is to say, after baby's born, keep the baby connected for at least 30 seconds, if not longer. And that's been shown to improve outcomes, especially in preterm babies. And then we clamp the cord and we let the partner typically cut the cord, and then we pass baby to mom. And then we take it, basically a needle, and stick it in the cord and just collect the rest. And that can be stored for future use.
Right now, cord blood is being used to treat certain types of cancer and immune deficiencies. In the future, researchers hope stem cells can be used for much more, including mitigating symptoms for people with autism, like my son Zane. The process is expensive, several thousand dollars up front to collect the blood. and then a few $100s annually to store it. And for many parents, it's out of the question. I asked Dr. Kohari whether she thought it was worth it.
The tricky part is it can't always be used for the baby that donated it, because if there's a genetic issue, well, then that cord blood has the same genetic issue. So it's maybe not always as valuable in that regard. But the thing that's sort of interesting is that we're learning more and more every day about what those stem cells can be used for. So although right now the likelihood of ever having to access your own cord blood is pretty low, we don't know what the future may hold. And so having that banked away is sort of something that could be relied on in the future.
So when I was pregnant with Zane, we were really tight on funds. I mean, I think between me and Joe together, we made less than $60,000 a year and we lived in New York City. And I knew about cord blood banking at the time. And I literally thought we couldn't afford it because I knew that we would have to sign up for the subscription of a monthly or annual cost to bank the cord blood moving forward.
There's also actually public cord blood banks, which do the same processes, which is collecting cord blood from the umbilical cord after the baby's disconnected. And then it goes to a public bank where other people could access that cord blood, and it's more likely to be used because you have more people having issues that can access that. So that's another alternative that is typically free, whereas private cord blood banking, you pay a fee for that.
But I wasn't sure that we would find a match because my husband and I are genetically so different. I mean, he's like as New Jersey white American as you can get, super Caucasian. And I'm, you know, Indian, but from Tanzania and Pakistan. In any case, with Zane, we just couldn't afford it. But I really actually wanted to do it. And in retrospect, I really wish that we had, because we could have participated in a stem cell research study if we had autologous cord blood for Zane's autism. And in fact, we have Asha's cord blood, and Asha is 5, and we did have money, and I knew about it. So we did cord blood, cord tissue, and placental tissue, because there are different things you can do. And I've seen how science is just so incredibly fast moving. I wanted to have all the options.
That's awesome.
Well, it is and it isn't. They had a sibling study. And so if you had the sibling cord blood, you could participate. And so I went through this whole process. It was like 2 years of emails and labs. And finally, we get to the point where it's like, okay, Zane is getting to be bigger. He's like 80, 85 pounds. And, you know, their recommendation is a certain number of cells per kilogram of body weight. And we were actually hitting the max of, if we don't use Asha's cord blood now, it might not be a possibility for Zane. And so we finally, we did the cheek swab just to make sure it's a match.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, it wasn't a match.
Oh, wow.
So are more and more parents opting for cord blood banking at birth?
I think it's still mixed. In Connecticut, we don't really have a great public cord blood option. So those that do the private banking through various companies. Again, I think, you know, part of the issue is some of the financial considerations.
There are still many, many uses for stem cells that we have yet to learn about, and science will soon unleash. And because the umbilical cord is such a rich source of those stem cells, to me, it makes sense for us to have access to a store just in case something happens with our child in the future, and just in case there's a new therapy that can actually address it with those stem cells. And because parents who have children with chronic issues want to be on the forefront of that, I think it's nice to have as many tools in your toolbox as possible to address challenges. We'll be back after a quick break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome back to the Healthy Baby Show. If you've had a baby in recent years, there's a good chance you've heard of delayed cord clamping. The practice has been used by midwives for years, and as Dr. Kohari alluded to, she believes it should become a standard of care for all OBGYNs, as it is at Yale.
There is really significant benefit in delaying cord clamping, and specifically the benefits to baby. Most of our exposure to birth is from media, and oftentimes the baby comes out and it's clean and happy and has a belly button already, and there's like absolutely no mention of umbilical cord or placenta, but like really it's a super important part of birth.
That voice you hear is midwife McKenna Eld.
I am a licensed midwife in the state of New York. I currently work for and have worked for the last 6 years, an all-midwife practice that is based in Brooklyn. We are affiliated with a larger hospital system and have a really wonderful network of OBs and high-risk doctors that we co-manage with as necessary. But within the practice ourselves, we offer full-scope prenatal care, labor care and support, postpartum, as well as full-scope well-woman gynecological care.
We talked to her about delayed cord clamping, which she says midwives have traditionally practiced for centuries.
What we have known for literal millennia is that the cord should not be cut until they stop pulsing. That last transfusion of blood, which is up to a third of the baby's blood volume, increases hemoglobin levels. There are increased iron stores. There's an establishment of red blood cell volume that wouldn't otherwise be there. A decreased need for blood transfusions, which can be a common thing in preterm babies. In a lot of cultures, there's ceremony and ritual around the cutting of the cord. And it's a recognition of the baby's autonomy and also welcoming a baby into the communities. There are writings from like the 1700s where people were debating, you know, do you clamp the cord or do you not? And really like the justification for early clamping was to like not dirty the bed sheets. There was otherwise general recognition that babies fared better and transitioned better if you didn't cut the cord or clamp the cord until that pulsing was done.
Even though not all hospitals are practicing delayed cord clamping, ACOG has now just started to recommend a delay in umbilical cord clamping for at least 30 to 60 seconds after birth. This is because recent medical research backs up what McKenna just told us. The delayed cord clamping reduces the risks of iron deficiency, anemia in infants, and the need for blood transfusions in premature babies. Additionally, studies have shown that delayed cord clamping results in higher assessment of fine motor skills and social skills.
So baby is born, most babies transition very well. You know, 9 out of 10 babies transition very well, and they cry within the first minute and they turn pink and they've got good Apgar scores and they transition well. And every once in a while, there's a baby that doesn't transition well. Those breaths allow the baby's mature circulatory system or extrauterine circulatory system to kick in. So it's able to deliver blood to the brain, to the intestines, and kind of deliver blood to where it needs to go in the newborn. But if the baby hasn't breathed the placenta is still doing that job. It's still acting as the baby's lungs. So if you're cutting the cord before good breath has been established, essentially the oxygen supply has been cut off to the baby. There are instances in which delayed cord clamping should be weighed against possible risks, like if mom is experiencing a hemorrhage, for example, or, you know, if there is evidence that the baby is really going to experience some respiratory distress.
I asked McKenna what she tells women who come to her with questions about delayed cord clamping and cord blood banking.
When it does come up, that is usually the number one question. The first question is like, should I bank cord blood? And then the second question is, but I also really want to do delayed cord clamping. Can I do both? You know, I talked about physiologic cord clamping, which is waiting for the entirety of the blood volume to transfer to the baby, in which case those two cannot be done together. There is usually like some confusion and also some disappointment as well when people hear that they can't have the best of both worlds. But we have demonstrated that there is still benefit to be gained for 30 to 60 seconds of delayed cord clamping. So that if people did want to do both, kind of do less delayed cord clamping, shorter delayed cord clamping, and take whatever is left in the cord for private banking. But with public banking, you generally cannot do both because the likelihood that there will be usable number of stem cells within that blood is significantly decreased by any kind of delayed cord clamping. So you look at WHO, I think they recommend waiting 1 to 2 minutes before clamping the cord. American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, ACOG, they recommend at least 30 seconds to 1 minute. And then you look at American College of Nurse Midwives and they say 2 to 5 minutes. And that kind of generally tends to ensure that the large amount of the baby's blood volume has been transfused to the baby. ACOG discusses that with immediate cord clamping, there's like 39% enough blood and enough stem cells to be banked. And then if you wait even the 30 to 60 seconds, that drops down to about 17%.
However, that's okay for private banks, which don't have a strict volume limit to store the cord blood. And it's also okay for therapies that don't require high stem cell counts. For example, cerebral palsy or new autism therapies. The American Medical Association especially recommends cord blood banking if there's a family history of genetic conditions or if the baby has a sibling with a disease that may require a stem cell transplant. So I think it's really important for all moms to understand what's happening and make those decisions with your doctor beforehand and to remember how important all those first moments are after birth and how they affect your child's development. From delayed cord clamping to simple actions like skin-to-skin contact, which can really have a huge impact on your baby's development. When you do that, you stimulate your baby's brain, you're encouraging physical development, you're encouraging emotional and social development, and that skin-to-skin contact helps moms too, improving your own connection to your child as well as your milk production during this key time. It actually stimulates your milk production.
One of the things that I've seen over the years in my experience is kind of a greater respect for the return to simplicity, which is to say, you know, physicians and midwives sharing their expertise and realizing that maybe something like delayed cord clamping, which midwifery has practiced for years, maybe is in fact better, that physician practice should listen to some of the things that our midwife colleagues have always been proponents of. So I think, you know, a more collaborative care model of combined types of providers for women, I think is really the future, as well as incorporation of doula programs. I'd really like to see more of that additional bedside support through their labor process.
It's time for a quick break, but we'll be back in a minute.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome back to the show.
There's certainly promise beyond what the science knows to be true at the moment in stem cells, and that's part of what makes it so exciting to be in as a field.
That's Dr. Nina Tannen. She's a biomedical engineer and CEO and co-founder of Epibone, a startup that uses stem cells from a patient's fat to grow human bones. It's an incredible feat of bioengineering, and full disclosure, I'm proud to be one of the company's investors. I asked Nina to join the show because I wanted to know more about the future of stem cells, specifically how stem cells can be used to repair diseased or damaged tissue later in life.
I mean, we all started out life as one cell big, okay? And when we were that one cell had the most potency of any cell in humanity. There's two properties of stem cells. They can self-renew, so they can proliferate, and they can differentiate. So when we were one cell big, that one cell became everything that we are. So it had what's called totipotency, full potency to become any part of the body. And then that cell divided, became two, divided, became four, and the cells differentiated and became our brain, heart, tissue, liver. So the stem cells that we use for making bone and cartilage are called mesenchymal stem cells. They come from like the middle layer of the embryo in our embryonic development, and they end up living in our bone marrow and in our fat and other parts of our body. But they can become bone, cartilage, connective tissue like ligaments and tendons, and fat. So those are pretty useful tissues.
I would love for you, as a mom, knowing everything you know about the power of stem cells, I'm assuming you did cord blood banking.
I did not, interestingly enough. So I didn't do banking of my kids' stem cells because I guess what I did was delayed clamping of the cord. You know, I thought to myself, what's the probability that I will need my daughter's own cells to heal her? Versus what is the benefit that my daughter might get if I ask the nurses to do this delayed cord clamping, which allowed all of those stem cells to go back into her right then. So that's what I did with both kids. And I basically told myself, well, I'm going to take the risk that if they were to ever need them, by the time they would need them, there would be a match with a donor available. And I don't know if that calculation was correct. I mean, I hope so,
because I actually have very complex genetics. And so finding an HLA match is actually not the easiest thing to do if you have a very complicated ethnic background, as my kids do. They're like Ashkenazi, South Asian, Central European, Eastern European, like they're complicated. And that's actually part of why I became a bone marrow donor pretty early in life, is because it's just harder to find a match.
I did that the second time with Asha, but we did kind of a dual. We also took placental tissue, cord tissue, and the stem cells because it was an option. And, you know, I've seen that it could be a possibility that you need autologous stem cells. But I think also on your end, we can derive stem cells from fat and from bone marrow.
Yeah, like if for Zane, he may not be an HLA match to Asha, but you can find really similar cells to those cord blood stem cells in his own fat. So maybe there's an option, if there is a stem cell study you'd like to do, that would involve proliferating his own cells.
There's conflicting research, but I've seen something there that I know there's something to it. But it's just like throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and hoping something kind of goes where it needs to go to help repair something that needs repairing, versus being very objective and having a target.
I mean, that is not entirely crazy considering how much is known, and especially how much is unknown about autism. Genetic factors only, at best measurements, account for 25% of cases. You'll find identical twins and they only are correlated 75% of the time in terms of autism prevalence. So it's such a mystery that it's really, I think, pioneering families that have the fluency and the agency and the resources to help discovery for other families too. What you're doing is not just for you, but also for so many other families.
Nina uses a type of stem cell found in adults to create their own bone. She doesn't rely on banked cord blood for the particular work she's doing.
What we do is we take stem cells that live in our body and we coax them into living body parts that can serve as replacements for our bodies as we age, as we get injured. And we made history this past year for being the first company to ever gain permission from the FDA to take stem cells and grow them into bone and replace bones in people's bodies after, for patient one, injury after a car crash, patient two, congenital defect, and patient three, congenital defect. And there are now three people living with engineered bones made out of their own cells.
Can we talk about why is it better for a little girl who might have a congenital defect to have a bone grown by epibone using stem cell technology versus what might be a traditional implant?
Well, let's just use that word, traditional implant. You know, it's crazy. Bone is the most transplanted human tissue after blood, and the only way to get human bone is to cut it out of a human. And so if you've got this little girl with a congenital defect, she may be missing her cheekbones or her jawbone may be underdeveloped. The only way to get enough bone, like the traditional implant you talk about, is going to be cut out of her rib or cut out of somewhere else on her head. And so you can imagine, if you're trying to spread around the bone of this tiny little human, you know, you have to really weigh the damage that you would do to the person by cutting them apart versus the benefit they would get from being reconstructed. And so these kids end up going through multiple surgeries. And that's just a crappy way to heal a person.
Well, number one, I'm so proud to have been a part of it and just get to see this. But number two, I just realized something about stem cells that I think is so cool about you, which I never really thought about it. But what you are doing is allowing the human body to heal itself.
You know, that's like my rebel side of me, where I'm like, okay, medicine is so patriarchal. This idea of a patient and the surgeon who's, you know, the surgeon is the one who does the work, not the patient. But actually, the patient's doing all the work. And recentering healing inside our own bodies and reclaiming our own body's power to heal itself with this enabling technology that we provide that gives those stem cells an opportunity to do more of what they can do, but kind of are limited in the body, because basically we take the stem cells and we put them in a new bone outside the body and we coax them and grow that new bone and then put it back in. And that's something that I feel like makes me pretty rebellious in the medical community, because we're recentering the power of healing inside our own bodies. You are your own medicine.
I asked Nina about some of the controversies surrounding her work.
So we all started out life as one cell big, but in my view and the view of many people, that one cell is not a human. Now, there are some people who share the opposite view and say if life begins at conception, a human embryo that's one cell big is ethically equivalent to a human. I don't think a seed is a tree, you know? I think they're different. So that's where I stand on that. Where do you become a human is a very political question being worked out right now in the courts. But someone who's experienced pregnancy that leads to birth and pregnancy that is non-viable in all its shapes and forms, I don't believe that an embryo is a human. Did I experience loss when I had embryos that were non-viable? Of course. Is it the same loss of losing a human? No.
Do you see that as your biology failing you or supporting you?
I felt I had both narratives. I feel like biology supported me because there were chromosomal abnormalities in those embryos that meant that they self-destructed. Now, did my body have awareness of that self-destruction, or did it like hang on to the tissue for a long time and cause lots of havoc on my body? Like, that's another story for another podcast. But, you know, missed miscarriage, which is something that I experienced more than once, is something that's really difficult. And so because there's so much ambiguity in terms of how people view when does life begin, there's been a lot of ethical controversy about manipulation at various stages of that developing embryo. And I believe that it should be. But embryonic stem cells were all derived from non-viable embryos. You know, that's sort of like a corollary to the idea of brain death, and that after brain death, it's okay to harvest a body for organs. And that view was applied to embryos and said, if that embryo is brain dead, i.e. non-viable, there are certain healthy cells, just like your heart can be alive, even if your brain is dead, there could be certain cells inside that embryo that were still alive and still useful. But because there's controversy around the creation of unused embryos at all, there was a lot of controversy about potentially harvesting cells from these non-viable embryos. And that is only one of the many types of stem cells that I mentioned. Okay, those are embryonic stem cells. There's adult stem cells. There's induced pluripotent stem cells. There's lots of different types of stem cells. But because embryonic stem cells were derived from this source, and some of those cells were derived under fuzzy informed consent, they kind of clouded the entire industry and the entire academic science of this industry too. So the advent of newer types of stem cells that come from adults where you can sidestep some of these issues of informed consent, or with induced pluripotent stem cells that sidestep the need for an embryo itself, I think it's really moved the field forward.
I asked Nina how she thinks the field will change in years to come.
I think we're going to see a lot of progress in the coming years for what's called universal donor stem cells. And so we won't have to be so reliant on our own cells or the cells of our immediate family for healing potential. I think we're going to see that open up much more. You know, we talked a lot about autism. There's a lot of correlation between certain mutations that affect congenital heart defects and also the mind. And this is something that I was interested in during my PhD, and I didn't make much headway with because I was graduating soon. But I think we're going to start to understand more of this nature-nurture question and be able to coax not only the cells in our own bodies, but coax our cells outside our bodies. You know, we may not be perfect at being able to create that environment for our own body, but we can learn from what those ideal conditions are and create conditions outside the body that can help make new therapies. So I'm excited for the future. I'm excited to participate in it in my own small way. And I'm really excited to see my little tiny humans continue to grow. This was the Christmas we bought my daughter her first microscope. So I'll end on that. I believe in science.
Well, that's it for the show this week. Next week, we'll be talking all about the magic of a baby's brain and how it develops. I've learned with my experience at Sane from some of the top neuroscientists in the world how a baby's brain develops and how atypical brains develop and why. And now that I understand these things, I've learned that there are so many simple things that we as totally new parents can actually do to set the stage for optimal development and create an even more resilient child by doing so. And it's just really exciting to put some of that knowledge to use. So tune in and learn more about what the research says. The Healthy Baby Show is a production of iHeart Podcast Network and HealthyBaby.com, where you can find a new line of the safest baby essentials. The Healthy Baby Show is hosted by me, Shazi Visram. Our lead producer is Jennifer Bassett. Executive producers are Nikki Etor, Anna Stumpf, Shazi Visram, and James Violette. Mastering and sound design by Carl Cadel and Dan Bauza. Additional writing and research by Julia Weaver. Our theme music is by Anna Stumpf and Hamilton Lighthouser. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.